Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Jeeves, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome to another Wednesday evening and in another episode of the Voice of Indie podcast. This is episode number 156. I'm your host, Beam Weeks, and with me, per usual, is Mr. Stephen Jeeves. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing great. It's we got a hot week going down here in Alabama, upper 90s every day. It's a frog summer, too. You go outside at night, sit on the deck, and the frogs are deafening. They're just all looking for friendship. Yeah, that's what they call it, friendship. So we've got a book that we're publishing right now, right this second, practically, The Dayang by M.C. Howard. That's the first in the Dayang trilogy. It's kind of a sci-fi thriller, intrigue, mystery, you name it, it's all in there. Very cool series. And the ebook is going to go up, I think, tomorrow, and the print books are going up tonight. So by the next week's podcast, you people should be able to order copies. Get out there and check out The Dayang by M.C. Howard. First in the trilogy. What's next,
man? And hot on the heels of that is M.C. Howard's The Degree, book two in The Dayang trilogy. And that's an edit right now. Just got that in here in the last couple of days. And I will be getting to that hopefully this weekend. And keep an ear open for that one. And an eye open on the newsletter and all that good stuff. If you want to join in tonight's show, if you like, you got a question or a comment that you want to make, there's a couple of ways that you can participate. And here are those ways.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest. Or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
And speaking of hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter, Verwayne Greenho, he's got a hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter. He says, episode 9 of my romance series is now live on Vela. This story in the romance series is a love story of a couple in their 80s. And he says, the husband explains to a CNA how they lived a full life despite some terrible tragedies. So if you want to find that, go over to Twitter or X or whatever it is they're calling it these days. And type in hashtag Fresh Ink Group and click on latest and you will find, scroll down to you, find Verwayne Greenho's tweet. And right there is the link. Click on it and you can go check it out.
All right. We've got another book coming out in the next week or two. I Won't Be Your Escape Goat by David Carroll. He's the NBC newscaster in the Chattanooga market down here in southern Tennessee. David's got several books out by us, Volunteer Bama Dog, where he takes a look at people of the South. And then he's got Hello Chattanooga. What's that about, Bean?
Hello Chattanooga is about people that like to go into Chattanooga and just say hello. No. Hello Chattanooga is a look back at all of the people who came through that market and performers, musicians, vaudeville, country music stars of today, rock stars of today, people from the 40s, the 50s, going all the way back to the turn of the last century up to modern times. He's got pictures in there. He's got newspaper reviews. You find out what it was like when Benny Goodman came there and played in town what it was like when Al Jolson was there and how he got the people going. And, you know, it's just really cool. And it's the kind of book that if you're a historian, an entertainment historian, a music fan, actors, boxing, Muhammad Ali fought there, just all kinds of cool stuff. Grab a copy. It's worth having.
Yeah, now the book that we're getting ready to put out is called I Won't Be Your Escape Goat, and he's gone around and collected misspellings and misstatements in signs and on newscasts and things like that and put them in the book. Had an artist friend add some cartoons and more humor to it and whatnot. It's a very cool thing. I just opened it up to look at it right here. For example, bad spelling is our worst enema. And then, yeah, and he says, but with, and then every one of these, David Carroll puts a comment in parentheses after it. And that one, he says, but with you leading the fight, we'll have a good outcome.
Yeah.
Believe me, if you misspell just one word, your whole life is urined. Here's that teacher thinks my son has 80, eight, oh, that's an eight and a zero. My teacher thinks my son has ADHD.
Good thing it wasn't 70 HD.
But anyway, the book is full of these. He's also got some signs and whatnot. You know, I don't know if you're like me, but I like to go over to YouTube every now and then and just punch in crazy signs or funny sayings or misspellings or whatever, and go around and, you know, where people go collect pictures of funny signs that are up and stuff. And he's got a bunch of those in here too. So that's I Won't Be Your Scapegoat by David Carroll. We're looking to get that out in the next week or so.
Yeah. And it's a funny book. Stephen and I, going through it, we literally laugh out loud at these things. Also coming up here pretty soon, coming down the pipe, is Celebrate 98 by Dave Hooker from Off the Hook Sports. This is a look at the 1998 Tennessee Volunteers National Championship football team. So if you're a Tennessee Vols fan, or if you're just a college football fan, and that's the season's right around the corner, grab a copy of this. Keep your ears and eyes open for this. I'm not sure about the exact date. I know we're still waiting on some photographs. It's going to be chock full of cool photographs too. So keep your ears and eyes open to our newsletter. And what's that? You're not subscribed to our newsletter?
What?
What's wrong with you? All right, here's how you can subscribe to our newsletter and get all of the news and the current what's what on this show and everything else going around Fresh Ink Group.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter. New releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
Here's what's what. I'm working on an audio book, and this one is for Cheryl Carpinello, and it's The Young Knights, and it's coming along. It's a little bit of a slow go because she's, you know, most authors have beta readers. She's got beta listeners. So there's some places where, you know, this guy should be yelling because he's in a nervous, tense situation, and the voiceover guy didn't necessarily yell it. He hollered it, but not quite, you know, to the pitch that the beta listeners expected. So we're working on that, and hopefully that'll be done before too long. And Stephen Skibicki's American Darkness, still working on that. That's pretty much done on my end, but Mr. Skibicki was adding some more poems to it, and I believe a couple more short stories as well. So once he gets done with that and gets it back to us, we will let you know when that'll be available. Really cool poetry. This guy is an amazing poet. Some dark poetry. If you're into like the Sylvia Plath stuff and just some really almost horror kind of poetry and just some really cool stuff. Spooky. Keep an ear out for that, and we'll be having that out before too long. American Darkness by Stephen Skibicki.
All right, so let's talk about the top 25 bestsellers. This is the print bestsellers from Fresh Ink Group. What's been going on this past week? I'm seeing a couple of familiar old friends on this list that we haven't seen for a little while. Let's start at the bottom with 25, The Autumn Tree by Dr. Aisha Ehsan. She's a Pakistani national who's teaching in the United Arab Emirates. She was one of our first authors to join Fresh Ink Group a long time ago, and she just won a national award from the United Arab Emirates government for her book, The Autumn Tree, published by Fresh Ink Group, and it's coming in at number 25.
Now, congratulations, Aisha.
Yeah, now The Chair is a series by Robert McKenzie, and the first three books are out, Volume 1, Volume 2, and Volume 3. Volume 4 is being worked on right now. I'm seeing all three volumes, 1, 2, and 3, in our top 25. This is interesting.
All
so,
right.
In 24, The Chair, Volume 2, Faith, Hope, and Love. It's the paperback edition by Robert McKenzie. We'll find the others as we get a little higher in the list. Next above that, Hello Chattanooga, Famous People Who Have Visited the Tennessee Valley by newscaster David Carroll. Now, How to Paint an American by Andrew McGregor. That is the paperback edition, and I'm seeing the hardcover is about 8 or 10 slots above it. So the hardcover is still outselling the paperback on this novel, How to Paint an American by Andrew McGregor. Now, again, The Chair. This one's Volume 3, the newest edition by Robert McKenzie. The paperback is above that. Now, here's an interesting blast from the past. Beam, Time Past, Time Present, Essays, Stories, and Reminiscences of What I Learned the First Time Around by Mark Allen North.
Wow.
Paperback edition. And we haven't seen that on the list in a while. Yeah. And then above that.
I edited that about 6 or 7 years ago, it seems like.
Oh, more than that, I think. More
than
that.
Probably.
And then above that, Larry Landgraf's Into Spring, The Next Generation.
Wow.
That followed Into Autumn. There's four books in his dystopian series of sci-fi novels. Ugly Future, Government is Broken Down. People have formed small communities to fend for themselves. That's the Into series by Larry Landgraf, and Into Spring is next on our list. As we remember, A History of the Women's Relief Corps in Beaufort, South Carolina by Najma Thomas takes a look at the first all-black women's relief corps in that area and covers the whole history, historic photos, stories, all of it. It's really cool. Next, Slingshot, Building the Largest Machine in Human History by Robert G. Williscroft. The paperback edition has been relaunched by Fresh Ink Group, republished, a new edition, updated, and everything about it is just sparkling new. Slingshot, Building the Largest Machine in Human History. Now, that's the first of the four Star Child Saga books. We'll be putting out the Daedalus Files and the two that are after that in the coming weeks. Above that, the hardcover of How to Paint an American. And above that, How to Teach Driving Behind the Wheel Lesson by Lesson, Instructor's Edition. And it's the hardcover that's selling on that one. Now, above that, The Chair, Volume 1, the first book in The Chair series, the one that first got the attention of Kathy Ireland. That's in the paperback edition, now in our top 10. All right, let's move up from that. American Agony, The Opioid War Against Patients in Pain by Dr. Helen Burrell. It's a look at the politics of what's going on right now with the opioid crisis and enforcement. And then above that, Robert G. Williscroft, Operation Ivy Bells, a Mac McDowell mission. That's the first of four submarine, Cold War submarine thrillers in the Mac McDowell series by Robert G. Williscroft. Daddy Yo-Yo and the Legendary Marble Tournament, paperback edition, is next up. That's by Janice D. Toney. That's a chapter book, an illustrated chapter book for young adults and children about bullying. Now, next one, The High Road, Memories from a Long Trip. Who's that by, Beam?
That's by former Alabama drummer Mark Herndon. He played drums for the country music supergroup Alabama for 28 years.
Wow.
Yeah, this was a cool book. I've read it. Just cool stories, and Mark's a good guy. So,
I drove past his house yesterday and honked. All right, how to start and run your own food truck business in Florida by A.K. Wingler. It's next on the list. That's one of three How to Start Your Own Food Truck Business books that we have out by her. Next up, the hardcover edition of Retired Naval Lieutenant Commander Jerry Pate's Submariner. 30 years of hijinks and keeping the fleet afloat. That's 60 chapters of memoir, and it's very cool. Now, the hardcover of the novel, The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms. That's been really surging the last couple of weeks or so. Now, we get above that, the paperback edition of Operation Ivy Bells, a Mac McDowell mission. So the one that was below was the hardcover. The hardcover, Robert, is out there selling almost as well as the softcover. Above that...
Mm-hmm.
The hardcover edition of the latest Chair book by McKenzie, The Chair, Volume 3, hardcover. And this is in our top 5 bestsellers right now, a hardcover novel. Who would have thunk it? Now, that brings us to our top 4. Numbers 3 and 4 are tied for the Bronze Star this week. Sassy Discovers the AME Church by B.A. Johnson, which is the first of her 2-book Sassy series, followed by Sassy Discovers Peter Allen's Grit. And this is illustrated chapter books teaching young people about the AME Church. And it's tied with Shipwrecked and Rescued, the paperback edition by Larry Jorgensen, the story of the 240 Chryslers back in the 1920s being shipped to Canada that never made it there. What happened? Buy the book. Check it out. Now that gets us to our top two, our top two. Number two with the Silver Star this week, Submariner, 30 Years of Hijinks and Keeping the Fleet Afloat by Jerry Pate, the paperback edition. Congratulations, Jerry. Surged back up into the number two slot again. This one, and I'm using this term ironically, has legs for a submarine. That brings us to number one. Number one. Print bestseller from Fresh Ink Group this week, and this one is coming in more than double the sales of the number two book, so this one's really surging and doing great, The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms. That is a cool book, and I think we're going to have our first commercial coming up is going to be for The Calling Dream, so we'll be able to learn a little bit more about that. Congratulations to all you guys for the top 25 bestsellers from print, in print.
Yeah. Congratulations, one and all. Hey, listener, do you have a favorite episode you want to relive? Or perhaps there's an episode you missed, or you're new to the program and you want to hear what we're all about? We've got an archive that's chock full of past episodes, so you don't have to worry about missing an episode, although we prefer to have you here live and interacting with us through telephone calls and Twitter. But if you can't make it, here's how you can find our episodes in the archives.
Find your favorite show in the Voice of Indie archives on YouTube at Fresh Ink Group, StephenGees.com, BeamWeeks.com, FreshInkGroup.com, and on Spotify. And now, you can listen on iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn. Just search the Voice of Indie, all one word.
In 1945, 10-year-old Ronald Dennison, the son of a backwoods Arkansas preacher, began having profound dreams about religion and a strange red-haired woman. The dreams follow him for decades, with the woman sometimes seducing him, other times calling him to become a televangelist, but eventually berating him for his sins of lust. She holds a secret so dark that he dares never admit it, even to himself. The more famous and wealthier he becomes, the more he struggles with his adultery, his fetish, and his shame, until his torment can no longer be contained. Staggering revelations challenge everything he ever believed. Will truth bring him the peace he always craved? Or will the woman's demands prove more than he can bear? Read the novel, The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms.
All right, yeah, Carlisle, yeah. He's out there really on social media promoting this book. So, yeah, grab a copy. All right, let's get to tonight's guest. Joseph Carabas told stories to anyone who would listen starting in childhood. Wrote his first stories in grade school and started getting paid for his writing in 1978. His work history includes periods as a long-haul trucker, apprentice butcher, apprentice coffee buyer slash broker, lumberjack, cold regions researcher, mathematician, semanticist, semioticist, physicist, educator, chief data scientist, chief research scientist, chief neuroscience officer, neuromarketer in residence, and chief research officer. A little bit of a Walter Mitty. Prior to becoming a full-time author, Joseph sat on several advisory boards, including the Center for Multicultural Science and the Journal of Cultural Marketing Strategy. He was a senior research fellow at the Society for New Communications Research, an Annenberg Fellow at the University of Southern California's Center for the Digital Future, Director of Predictive Analytics, Center for Adaptive Solutions, and was an original member of the Beatles. I'm just kidding. Was an original member of the NYAS UN's Scientists Without Borders program. He held patents covering mathematics, anthropology, neuroscience, and linguistics based on a technology he created in his basement and from which he created an international company. He retired from corporate life and now spends his time writing fiction and nonfiction based on his experiences. His work appears regularly in anthologies and his own novels. You can often find him playing with his dog, Boo, me and you and a dog named Boo, and snuggling with his wife, Susan. With that, welcome to the show, Joseph.
Hey, Joseph.
Hello. How are you?
How are you? Good to have you on.
Thank you for taking me on, and I got to do something about that bio. It's way too boring and dull.
It's lengthy and full of all kinds of interesting twists and turns. I especially like the your original member of the Beatles.
Yeah.
Most people don't know that. I got that gig right after I was being a basically a helper and a guardian for the Supreme Court. It was a bit of a, you know, I had to keep on going across the Atlantic, but I did it. I did it.
Right.
Yeah, and did you really need to say semi-otis, or could we all just assume that?
I think, you know, most people just go, well, yeah, he must have done that, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm curious, what does a patent in anthropology look like?
It's for applications and research methodologies that were unique, and they were based on a bunch of tools I created that got put into that technology.
Oh, well, that's cool.
All right. So, where are you originally from?
Originally, I was born in Melrose, Massachusetts.
Okay, where do you live now? And where have you lived in between?
Oh, where have I lived in between?
And why?
Why? I lived up in the what most people would consider the far north because it was easier to do cold reasons research there. and I was a long-haul trucker throughout pretty much the eastern seaboard and what we used to call Maritime Canada. Now I believe it's called Atlantic Canada to confuse us, because that's where I could drive without having too many problems.
Hmm.
But, you know, where have I traveled? I've traveled a bunch of different places. I've studied with a bunch of different people. Pretty much my travels were to study and meet people. I come from a generation which hitchhiked a lot, and I was one of those people who hitchhiked a lot. So it was pretty common for me to realize there was some person at University of Chicago who could help me understand something. Didn't matter that I was at University of SUNY at Albany. I just said, okay. Get on the interstate, put up a sign, let's see what goes. And that's what happened.
Hmm.
Cool. All right.
Wow. So you said here in your bio that you started writing early and that you started getting paid in 78. I'm not sure how old you are, so I don't know how old you were in 78 when you started getting paid. What's your progression there from starting to write as a young kid to actually being a professional?
Well, starting to write as a young kid, I would write basically little one-person plays, and for some reason, Mrs. Dominic in grade school, I did one. I don't know why she let me do one. I wrote something, and she let me perform it, and I went up to her couple of days later, and I said, would you mind if I did another one? No, that'd be good. Would you mind if I did another one? Yeah, okay. How about every week? Okay, fine. So Fridays, right after lunch, when everyone was, you know, full and tired and sleepy because they just ate, I would put on these little plays, many of which sucked really well. They really did a good job of being bad. And, but I kept at it. I didn't stop. And I knew I had it right when people were laughing their heads off and falling out of their chairs, out of their desks. And I knew I wasn't doing right when people were picking up their pencils and doing their homework. Great learning experience. Didn't get paid for it, but it taught me a lot. And that got me into Miss Carty's sixth grade class. At that point in time, the TV show, the original Adam West, Burt Ward, Batman and Robin TV show. So I wrote a parody in sixth grade called Flat Man and Ribbon. And at that point in time, there was a pretty ubiquitous set of commercials for women's underwear about a living girdle and a living bra. So I wrote this parody. I'm still laughing about it years later, where Flat Man and Ribbon had to help Puss Lady because she was being attacked by her living bra and girdle. And they had to get it off of her, which pleased them greatly. Flat Man told Ribbon to go back to the flat cave because he wasn't needed anymore. And this was in sixth grade a while ago. You were curious about my age. I'm gray-haired just about everywhere. And there weren't people really terribly worried about if you were saying or doing things which were a little bit off. I remember Miss Carty, she laughed the hardest of everybody. I mean, laugh. You could hear it. People were saying they could hear us laughing in the hall. They wanted to know what was going on in the classroom. So then I'm now in junior high. I had a crush on a student teacher in English, mainly because she paid attention to me. And I wrote a bunch of poems, some of which were good, most of which sucked, but she was very gracious about it and tolerated it. Got into high school, and now I'm a sophomore in high school. And in eighth grade, for a science fair project, I had written a paper, which pretty much dealt with the title of the paper was The Possibility of Life in Other Dimensions. And my eighth grade science teacher gave me an F for the year because there was no way I knew what I was talking about, and it was ridiculous, and I was stupid, and so on and so forth. So in sophomore year of high school, Mrs. Hudon, who was a glory, she saw everyone in the class was doing poorly, and she said, for extra credit, I would like everybody to pick a mathematician and write their biography, two or three pages. And I went to her and I said, would you mind if I wrote another paper? And I'll write the, if you think what I write you sucks, I will write the biography, but I'd like to show you this paper. And she was very tolerant. She said, okay, all right. So I rewrote the paper with more stuff that I had learned, gave it to her, and I didn't get it back until after I had left high school. She had taken it, given it to the head of the math department. They had taken it to some university professors who wanted to know who in the hell this kid was who was writing this stuff and coming up with these ideas because they were really different. And I still have the paper. I still have her comments. And she said that she gave me a B+, not because of the content, which was amazing and eye-opening and revelatory, but because of my grammar and spelling.
Wow.
Big lesson. And now I'm traveling around and working and everything else, and I'm in college for the third time. Never got a degree. Never had the patience to get one. So I'm in college for the third time, and I wrote a story, which is in my anthology, Tales Told Around Celestial Campfires. I think it's the last story in that anthology called Winter Winds, which I thought was a really great Twilight Zone story. This is when you actually mail things to magazines, and they didn't like it. Asimov's didn't like it. Analog didn't like it. So purely as a joke, I sent it to Child Life, and they loved it. They thought this was wonderful. I hadn't read Child Life since I was a kid in my doctor's, my dentist's office.
Ghosts and Galant.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, they paid. They paid real money. Back then, I'm serious. We're talking 1978. They paid real money. And much like Mrs. Hudon, who had paid attention, and someone in my student teacher in English, in junior high English, who paid attention, the people paid attention. Hot dang. I was off. Didn't sell another thing for a few years. Then I sold some stuff. And not. And then I sold more stuff. And then I sold more stuff. And then I met A.J. Budrys. I don't know if you know who he is or who he was.
No.
A.J. Budrys was one of the last of the golden age into the modern age of science fiction authors. His work is technically dated, but as craft and storytelling, I put it up against anything. And he basically took me on when he had a magazine called Tomorrow. And I knew him. I had met him. So I wrote him and said, would you mind if I sent you something? He said, I want to have things. I want you to send me stuff. I will publish what you send me. And, of course, he didn't. Not everything, but a lot of what I published. And a lot of what I wrote he published and paid well for. And taught me. He took an interest. He guided me. He told me what wasn't working and why, and gave me a lot of suggestions on how to fix it. And that's a key thing to anybody listening. When you are with a critique group, a working writers group, working with an editor, whatever they tell you is pretty much worthless unless they tell you how to fix it. And do remember, they're telling you how they would fix it.
Yeah.
Which is great, but because it might point to what you need to do to fix it the way you need to fix it for how you want it to come out. So I'll be quiet.
Hmm. Yeah, last thing you need is a beta reader or an editor who gets you a B plus because you still have grammar problems.
Yeah.
So I think we need to roll a commercial here, and I want to hear a little bit more about this ongoing college career.
All right. So we'll do this here commercial.
Lucifer loses his day job, so he starts his own gig. A little girl's tantrum destroys her toys, but will they lash out in revenge? Can a miserable housewife find a new life for herself in a tear-stained old painting? Eerie charms of the short story, fantasy, mystery, and horror includes a snake deciding the fate of the world, a slot machine choosing life's winners and losers, a malevolent fairy dancing men to their deaths, a couple desperate to escape a train station, the dog show judge facing death, and more great tales. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, Eerie Charms is available worldwide in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. Patricia A. Guthrie offers a cauldron of eerie delights that will please, delight, and yet terrify you.
Fresh Ink Group presents Volunteer Bama Dog, a TV Guy's love letter to the South. I'm David Carroll, longtime Chattanooga broadcaster. Volunteer Bama Dog is a collection of my stories shared on TV, in newspapers, and online. From growing up in an Alabama country store to a long career in radio and television, I'll introduce you to the kinds of Southern characters we've all known or wish we knew. This collection of humor, history, trivia, and heartfelt memories serves up more than 60 essays. Drawing from my experiences with news, music, and entertainment, Volunteer Bama Dog is both educational and fun. It offers behind-the-scenes commentary on how we cover and deliver the news and on the music we grew up with. Among the book's highlights is a series of stories that recall Southernisms or the Appalachian English that generations of Southerners still quote to this day. I try to bring that language to life, hoping you'll say, "I knew people who said that," or, "Wait, he's been listening to me." This follow-up to my first book, Chattanooga Radio and Television, is more of a personal account of my experiences with those many wonderful people I've met and even worked alongside over the years. I hope you'll join me as Volunteer Bama Dog celebrates the stories and people of the South. Volunteer Bama Dog is available worldwide in hardcover, softcover, and ebook formats, including iBook, Kindle, Nook, and more. Volunteer Bama Dog is proudly published by The Fresh Ink Group.
All right, David Carroll.
We are talking to author Joseph Carrabas. You can talk to him, too. Just call 516-453-9902. 516-453-9902. We do have a couple of things on Twitter over here. The first one, we'll do this first one here. Robert G. Willis-Croft, he says, earlier, Stephen, you were talking about Slingshot. He says, by the way, the new edition of Slingshot is in full color.
Oh, yeah, I keep forgetting that.
And Joe Conjul has a question for our guest, Joseph. He says, hi, Joseph. Of all the different jobs and positions you've held, is there one that stands out as having the biggest influence on your writing? By the way, I enjoyed Empty Sky very much. Stephen and Beam, sorry I've missed the last few episodes. Been busy finishing up my work in progress. That's all right, Joe. Good to have you on board. So, Joseph, got an answer for Mr. Conjul?
Yeah, the first thing is, hi, Joe. I really appreciated your review. It meant a lot. The job that I appreciated the most and which has influenced me the most through the years, one which wasn't actually mentioned on the resume, my own shortcoming, I guess, for not including it, there was a period of time where I worked in factories, because back when I was traveling around, you could go into a factory, go in the front doors of a factory and say, hey, I'm in town for the next 2 weeks. I need a job. Do you have something I can do? And they go, yeah, sure. You don't mind cleaning toilets. You don't mind doing floors. You don't mind, you know, blah, blah. Happy to have you on board. Same thing with farms. You didn't need papers or anything. You just walk up, say, hey, I'm going to be in town for 2 weeks. I noticed the harvest is coming in. Can I help you out? Sure. In that case, you'd get a bunk and meals. When it was just factory work, the YMCAs, I don't know if they still do this, but back then you could basically rent a bed or a cot in a YMCA, and that could be your address. So anyway, working in factories and truck driving, because the people I met doing that on farms, on the road, they weren't posers. They didn't pose. They didn't try to be what they weren't. They were truly real people. I know that I probably sound like Faulkner, but they really, this is who I am, this is who you are, and so long as, you know, you don't try to do anything strange with me, happy to have you here, happy to work with you, happy to talk with you. After work, let's go out and, you know, you got a couple of bits, we can buy some beers. Great people, because they were truly, they were generous as individuals to individuals with no expectation of anything in return. I remember one guy, factory worker, you would have looked at him and thought he was, you know, 2 degrees above the gutter. And this guy starts talking to me about, you know, so I just, you know, I notice you're reading that book on philosophy in your break. I said, yeah, well, you know, I'm kind of curious. Have you ever read the Upanishads? I'm not even sure I could pronounce Upanishads. He said, oh, well, you don't know what the hell you're doing. So, do you have a couple of copies I could borrow? Yeah. You going to get them back to me? No, I'll buy them from you. Oh, you can't replace these. Where'd you get them? Well, I was traveling in India. What the hell? So, you know, I met people like that. I met people who didn't have anything, and they would give everything to you because they trusted you to pass it on. Before there was the concept of pay it forward, these people knew about paying it forward. They understood. You take, you give, you share. There's food on the table. There's more than I need to eat. There's more than my family needs to eat. You hungry? Sit down. Have something to eat. I would be on farms, and a lot of these farms had a store, a farm stand attached to them. And there would routinely be people who came in and couldn't pay. And I remember Mr. Vincent, one guy, he and Mama Vincent, what do you need? Come over here, what do you need? And they wouldn't do a big thing because they didn't want the person to be embarrassed. And they would say, you go, you get what you want. You find what you need. You come here, I'll ring you up. And they would sit there, and they would look through the bag. Yeah, okay, and they'd, you know, empty the guy's cart or whatever it was, and ding, ding on the machine, ding, 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 and the drawer would pop open. Thank you, sir. Boom. Close the drawer. Have a good day. I can't. This is going to be my prejudice coming through, folks. I compare that with people I met in business all over the world. And the most insecure people, the people who were most willing to cause you pain purely because they thought it would benefit them, were business people. So when my wife and I, we had three businesses, when we created our businesses, we made it part of our structure. No. We give. If people can't pay, they can have. Just use it wisely. Use it for good. Okay, good. Thank you. Bye. And, of course, people who could afford it, right through the nostrils. You know, I mean, we weren't fools, but.
All right.
So when we talked the other day, you were talking about being a child of trauma.
Yes. And I'll apologize now. Some of your listeners may find this challenging information. When I was a very young child, well, the first thing was I was born blind, and I was misdiagnosed as being... back then, they used the term retarded. So my parents were going to have me institutionalized. And my grandfather said, no, I'll take him. I'll raise him. But he was very old at the time, and he passed away. So I had to move back with my parents. And they didn't really have the interest or the desire to deal with me. And what ended up happening was my mother, from a very young age until I was just entering my teens, raped me pretty much, well, pretty often, several times a week. And my father would then beat me with his fists or with his belt or a rubber hose to the point where I was bruised. I couldn't walk. Many times I couldn't move. And that caused me to leave home fairly early, shortly after Mrs. Hudon said, boy, you'd really write some amazing stuff. I was big. I mean, not like a giant, but I was a strong kid. And it wasn't difficult for me to make people believe I was older than I was. And I could get jobs, which were physical labor jobs, because people didn't care how much you knew. They cared how much you could move. Can you get that pallet over against the wall and pick it up? You know how to use a low boy? You know how to use a two-wheeler? You know how to use a hand truck? Yep, I do. Okay. You got a job.
Wow. So now you're known for talking to the animals. You got a dog. You enjoy the wildlife around your house?
Yes, very much so. Where we live, we abut some wild lands. Excuse me. And we have pretty much every day we have raccoon, skunk, possum, ground dogs. We have, this is not something I recommend to everyone. We have coyote and bear who come by. And I will go out with food in hand. And a lot of the animals will not take food from my hand.
Wow.
I usually toss the bears. We had a family of fox that were very wary of me at first, which I don't blame them. After all, I am a two-legger. You can't trust two-leggers. It got to the point where they would just come up to me and sit down like they were puppies around me, all of them, the vixen and everyone else, all the little kits. And I'd be giving them dog food. And they'd be crunching away, you know. Well, that's good. The raccoons, after they've had their kits, and the kits are, you know, getting around, moving around, they'll bring the kits to us. And it's always kind of cute because you can almost hear the raccoon mamas say to the kits, "It's okay. He's a human, but he's okay. But don't let him touch you. You don't know where his hands have been."
Yeah.
So anyway, and snake and owl and hawk who come into our backyard. We had an owl, haven't seen him in a while, Bart. Whenever I was cooking on the grill, Bart would come to his tree and watch me keenly. And I would make sure I left something there for Bart.
Wow.
So, now, with the whole thing with the fox is I just saw a video on, I think it was on YouTube, might have been on Instagram somewhere. Saw this video of a guy that found this fox that was tangled up in his fence. And it was he was in some bad position, and the guy went out there and he ended up clipping and took his time, and he clipped the fox loose, and then the fox took off and stopped and looked back at him and then took off again. And a few days later, the fox shows up at his back door doing this howling thing to get him to come out. So he came out there, and to this day, the fox will come up there and he'll feed him, you know, bring out some snacks and, you know, foods and things like that. And he'll, the fox lets him pet him. I mean, it was just like the fox coming back to say, "Hey, thanks. I appreciated that."
Yeah.
So these animals, they know that. They know what's going on.
Yeah.
So
I've written about my interaction with animals in a kind of a fantasy setting in again, in the short stories, Tales Told Round Celestial Campfires. But I also, I wrote a series, actually it's a continuing series of children's stories, or maybe adult stories for children, I guess, called Tales of the Woods. And they're all about animals, you know, fantasy animals, talking and doing and functioning, kind of wind in the willows type of stuff.
Cool. Now, when you're not writing, we'll move on to your writing here in a minute, but when you're not writing, do you have any how do you kill your time? I mean, how do you spend your time? Is it, do you have hobbies?
I kill my time with a 50-millimeter repeater rifle. Hawks worry. Oh, they don't like to be around. They try to silence their ticking. But what do I do for my time?
You're into music, guitar. I understand. Yeah.
I play guitar. I play piano, clarinet, saxophone, banjo, mandolin, violin. Actually, I wouldn't call what I play violin. It's more fiddle or fiddle technique, not violin technique.
Mm-hmm.
I've never met a musical instrument that didn't fascinate me, that I just couldn't resist the urge to see, could I make a pleasing sound with it? And a lot of times I couldn't, and a lot of times I could, and when I couldn't, I just practiced until I could. So that takes up a lot of my time. I know that this will be a shock to you, perhaps. Makes my wife laugh her head off. I read mathematics texts for fun, to relax, and physics texts. I know. neuroscience, anthropology. If we were on camera, we're in my office right now. If we were on camera, you could see the bookshelves behind me, which range from myth to, for example, simulation, knowledge-based computing, and fuzzy statistics, to contextual blessings, original blessings, Rucker's fourth dimension, Burning Bush, which is actually part of a four-book series on how fire has shaped civilization around the globe, Medieval Warfare, The Klan, a history of the Ku Klux Klan, The Tale of Peace. Yeah.
All right.
Someday I'm going to learn how to read. And, of course, Shakespeare.
Okay, fantastic. We do have a caller, so we're going to go ahead and take this call and see what – this is Dr. Helen. We'll see what Dr. Helen has in store for you. Hello, Dr. Helen.
Oh, hi. Well, you know, this man is very interesting, very resilient, considering what he's been through. And you know that I always ask a writer, what is their process? But in many respects, he already expressed that. So what I'm going to say is I'm amazed at your resilience with everything you went through and your suffering. And do you think in any way writing helps cure a writer of emotional distress?
Thank you for that question. And if you look at my biography, the one that's publicly available anyway, if you look me up on LinkedIn, for example, you'll see that my byline, if you will, is autobiography in the guise of fiction, fantasy, science fiction, magic realism, and blah, blah, blah. Mm. If you were to, as an example, if you were to read one of my books, The Augmented Man, which is a story of another aspect of my life. It's very, very autobiographical. The basic premise is the military, the U.S. government is just losing a war. And they need to get out of this, but they can't get out of it without losing face. So what are we going to do? And one guy comes up with a solution. He says, the big problem we're experiencing is people are coming back from combat either blowing their minds on drugs because of everything they've witnessed or with such severe PTSD that they can't function anymore and we have to put them away and that's costing us money. Well, what then's your solution? Let's find people who are already so damaged psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, that nothing fazes them. They can do the most horrible things without being affected. wow, that's an interesting idea. Where are you going to find these people?
Hmm.
We're going to get severely traumatized children and physically modify them. We're going to augment them to do what we need them to do. And the story, The Augmented Man, is about one of these augmented men, the team. When the enemy sues for peace, part of the negotiation is you have to kill all these creatures you created. One survives and is further experimented on. He escapes. And he finally ends up in the woods of Maine. And he is hiding. He just refuses to come out. Until one day he meets a woman who is very kind and gracious to the animals on her farm and the animals in the woods. And he falls in love with her. And now he has to go, because everything he is to kill. He cannot function unless he is killing. So now he has to go to the people who created him and say to them, you must destroy me before I kill again, killing what I love. And the middle section of the book, people around the globe, therapists around the globe, have contacted me and said the middle section of this book is a roadmap for how to deal with people coming out of severe PTSD. I went, thank you. That's exactly what I wrote it to be. Here are all the techniques that you need. And when I do book signings and do talks on this very subject of writing through your pain, letting your pain out in your work, I have people come up to me and say they understand their brothers, their cousins, their mothers, their wives, their sisters who have come back from combat or who have suffered as children. And that to me is so gratifying, because through this individual, this augmented man, he begins using what they made of him to change what he is to what he wants to be so he can love.
Now, wait a second. Are you talking also about you?
Yes, I am.
That's what I wanted to. Yeah, so go ahead.
Well, I was very fortunate. I met a wonderful, wonderful woman who didn't give up on me. And it was because of her that I decided I needed to heal. And that, of course, is what got me into creating patents on neuroscience and anthropology, because these are the fields that I studied to figure out why I was.
Yeah, but you left out something. Your talent from boyhood helped you through all of this. Your imagination and your writing, your creativity helped you through all of this and helped you love her and appreciate her, right? What I'm getting at, it seems like the core of your life, and maybe of most writers, is the writing itself is a healing tool.
Yes. In my case, very much so, yes. I would never deny that. I actively encourage people when I talk to groups of survivors of various issues. I offer to them writing to heal. And another thing that I offer to them is write your history to change your life.
Yes.
Because when we get these toxic events out and we're able to talk about them, that's where healing begins.
Yes.
That is the step to, you know, understanding why and how we became what we became, and to putting a stop to it, to moving on, to becoming better, to becoming what we want to be.
So wouldn't you say also that the writer is also a therapist?
Yeah.
Not only to yourself, but to other people?
In my case, it seems to be the case, yes.
Yeah, I think if you ask Beam Weeks and Stephen G's, I bet you they feel the same way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes,
I'm sure.
Yeah.
That writing doesn't only heal the reader, but it heals the writer.
Yeah, writing is a very cathartic ritual.
Did you say cathartic? You said cathartic, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for calling in, Dr. Helen.
Very interesting. He's a very interesting writer.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, okay. We'll look
for
you next
week,
Dr. Helen.
And I'm going to read your work. Bye.
Yeah.
All right.
Now, Joseph, you've been talking about...
Please.
You've been talking about The Augmented Man, which is your military sci-fi novel. You've got two other novels. You've got the anthology of short fiction and a nonfiction book. Over on Twitter, Joe Konzel is asking, Joseph, what's your favorite book that you've written, and why is it your favorite?
My favorite book is the next one. Whatever book I'm working on is the next one. That's my favorite. Because it has all my attention. That's a wonderful question. I personally feel it's unfair because to me it's like, which is your favorite child? They're all wonderful and they're all different.
We have another question. A comment in it. No, I guess there's no questions here. They're just comments. On Twitter, Verwayne Greenhoe, he mentioned that when he lived up in the UP, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, he would see a trio of fox pups playing around their den while Mama was out hunting. And he mentioned, amen, Dr. Helen and Joseph. After I had my skull fractured while working in the psych ward of a prison, I was lost for years but found my way back through writing. And he did.
Amen. Amen, brother.
Verwayne overcame a lot.
Yep. And saw a lot, too.
Yeah.
All right. We're starting to wind down on our time here, Joseph. Why don't you tell us about Empty Sky, another novel of yours?
Empty Sky is, I guess, kind of an urban fantasy, mythological mix, science, some pretty severe science. A young boy, interestingly enough, he's camping with his family in the Upper Peninsula. And is woken up at night by the moon because the moon has chosen him and his dog to help her keep dreams alive. She realized she's the queen of the night, Selene, the queen of the night, mistress of dreams. And she realizes that in the modern world, modern society, people are giving up hope. They no longer have hope. They no longer believe tomorrow will be a better day. They believe life is just what it is, and that's it, and you do your time, and if you get out, that's it. And that's not how we were meant to be. So she has working with her a set of creatures called the Guardians of the Moon, and she has a herald, a shape-shifting herald, and the dreams themselves, which are Oneroi, that's from Greek mythology. So they set out on a quest to recover the world's dreams, ability to hope. On the other side is Earl Pangiosi with the NSA, who also knows about dreams, and he is working to create a system which harnesses the ability to dream so he can influence dreams. Because if he can influence what you dream, he can influence what you do in waking life. And the last person or the last thing to take part in all this is a supercomputer built up at Dartmouth and based a lot on my time up at Dartmouth. The computer is Anne, an atrial neural network. And Anne was specifically designed to be able to dream the way humans dream. But because that is all she can do, to her, dreams are a reality. And like in our dreams, she can shift from one dream to the other, create any kind of reality she wants. So she is really where everything occurs, in her dreams. And there's a character, Grey Wolf, who's actively trying to help everybody survive all this, and Night Horse, who his ancestry goes back from Native American, back through Egyptian, back through Wenwepiket, who was the guardian of doors. Looks basically, he was a brother of Anubis, but he was the guardian of doors and the guardian of dreams. And I won't say how it turns out. Hope you read it and enjoy it. Joe Congell did. Good man, Joe.
All right. So let's touch on your newest novel, The Inheritors. What's this about?
The Inheritors is about gifted children who are kidnapped throughout all time and brought to a very far future, very different world to help save it from environmental catastrophe. And one of these brilliant children discovers that they were not brought forward to save the world so much as sustain the world, because the horrible way that the environment exists is necessary for the people who have survived to that point in time. They could not survive on a healthy world. They have to survive in a world that is polluted. So their function is not to heal the world, but to sustain it. And as I say, one of them discovers this and says, no, this is not what I'm supposed to be doing. This is not what you told me it was going to be like. And in the process of doing this, one aspect of these people in the far future is that they are immortal. But immortality is only for the gods, or in the case of this novel, the Judeo-Christian, Mohammedan aspect of God. So Lucifer and the Archangel Michael come into play, not as warriors warring against each other, but as brothers trying to help this kid solve this problem of what happened to the environment and how can he change it. And his twin brother, who's nowhere near his ability as a genius, but can have hints of it at times, comes into play, finds out where his brother is by a fluke of nature, and does everything he can to try to get to him. And again, people, the reviews, it hasn't got a lot of reviews so far. It's only been out for a few weeks. But the reviews are, I couldn't put this down. If you want to read a book that's blending philosophy with theology, with biology, with and making it all work, you got to read this book, which is thrilling to me because, yeah, that's, I want you to read my books. Yes.
Yeah, that's always a good thing to hear. It was difficult to put down, so.
Yeah. Now, Joseph,
one of my, one of my favorite anecdotes about not being able to put my books down, a guy was reading The Augmented Man, and in his review, he wrote, I missed my bus stop.
All right.
Yes.
That's a good sign.
All right. Well, we usually ask our guests near the end of the show if they've had any poignant fan reactions to their work, and I think you just gave us one. Yeah. Now, Joseph, you mentioned earlier, you touched on a couple of the short stories that are in your Celestial Campfires, your anthology of short fiction. We're going to highly recommend that. And that leaves that Think You Do, which is your nonfiction book. And what is that about?
Well, as I mentioned, I did work in neuroscience, neurophysics, blah, blah, blah. And this was with my last company, and which got the patents and stuff. And a company we were working with over in California said, this stuff you're doing is amazing and fascinating. Would you be interested in writing a blog post, weekly blog post about it? And I went, yeah, okay, but here's what I want to do. If I write about what I'm doing, that's going to really put people to sleep. Maybe 5 or 10 people on the planet will be interested. So how about if I say, here's an interesting thing we learned. Here's how it applies in real life. And here's how you don't need to know any of this stuff I'm talking about, but here's how you can change things you don't like about yourself to things you do like about yourself. So every week from 2008 to 2016, I think it was, I would write these, you know, how to get out of depression, part one. How to get out of depression, part two. How to recognize you're in a bad relationship. When you feel this way, here are things you can do. Cures for boredom. What does boredom really do? What's happening in your brain when you're bored? Here's how to prevent it. Here's how to get out of being bored. Here are things you can do. You really want to be heard? Talk to a musician. Stuff like this. So I'm with a new publishing company, new publishing house. The editor is going through my portfolio, and she goes, "This is amazing stuff. Let's make a book." And I went, "Yes, by all means, let's make a book." And that's how that Think You Do came about. So that's, I think, about 60, maybe 65 separate blog posts written now as chapters. And there you go.
All right.
Cool.
What kind of advice would you give to somebody getting started as a writer today, or even somebody that's been writing for a while, just kicking around and, you know, they need to hear something from somebody else? What kind of advice would you offer?
The advice that I would give, and I would give this very assertively, everybody knows you want to be a writer, write. Yep, good, okay. And if you want to be a writer, read. Yeah, okay, I hear that a lot too. But what you never hear, or at least what I never heard, was how to read. Read. Yeah, great. I read everything. Yeah, I'm reading soap boxes. I'm reading cereal boxes. I'm reading milk cartons. No. Read and understand and learn from what you're reading. You read something and you feel a certain way. You suddenly realize this character is really interesting to me. Okay, stop reading. Go back. This character is really interesting to you because figure out what the author did to cause you to be interested in that character. You're reading this chapter, this paragraph, and you feel cold. You're shivering in your chair in the middle of summer, the Alabama summer, and you're shivering. What did the author do that made you feel cold? How come you're feeling cold reading this book? Or you feel sadness. You feel longing. You feel desire. What did the author do? And now, once you figured out what they did, now you sit down and, quite honestly, you copy it. Copy it. Because unless you've got a memory like mine, you're not going to copy it word for word. You're not going to get it down word for word. You're going to get your take on it. And that's going to tell you what really stuck out to you, what really locked in your mind. Okay, now you see what really locked in your mind. Does this that you wrote give you the same as that what they wrote? No? Fix it. Yes? Good. Do the next paragraph. And keep on going. And Margaret Atwood has this great thing where she tells people, fail better. I think that is brilliant. Something doesn't work? Good. Do it again. Better. Until you stop failing at it. But keep the other thing she says is, the wastebasket is your friend, by God, yes. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. Steve Tyler with Aerosmith. He was talking about how Aerosmith would come up with great music. And he said, every week we'd get together in somebody's basement and we would say, what did you come up with that sucks? What? And he said, no, don't be afraid to suck. Put it out there. Because what you wrote that is the worst freaking thing you could do, someone else is going to look at it and say, hey, that one part, that one riff is really good. And if you knew how much of major, amazing music, modern rock, whatever you want to call it, country, is out there that started off mostly suck, you'd be stunned. You'd be staggered.
Wow.
Well, our guest this week has been Joseph Carabas. He's got a nonfiction book. He's got a short fiction anthology collection. He's got three novels out. He's working on more stuff. And it's been fun having you on here, Joseph. How do people find you? If they want to follow you, contact you, learn more about you, social media, blog, website, you on Facebook, you got some handles. How do we get to you?
I'm on LinkedIn, Joseph Carabas. I'm on Facebook as Joseph Carabas Author, and also just me as Joseph Carabas. There's my blog, josephcarabas.com. You can get the idea that I'm really inventive here with names.
Yeah, there's a theme.
I'm on Twitter, or X, as Joseph Carabas 2, because Twitter canceled my Joseph Carabas account, but for some reason, Joseph Carabas 2, they haven't touched. Okay. I'm on Instagram as Joseph Carabas. I'm on Pinterest as The Evolving Me. That's the one unique one.
The Evolving Me.
Oh, Goodreads. I'm on Goodreads as Joseph Carabas. I'm on Amazon.
All right.
Okay. And your books are available in retailers beyond Amazon or just Amazon?
Nope. They should be available everywhere. They're sending me royalty checks, so it's got to be available in more than just Amazon.
Okay. All right. Joseph Carabas, good luck to you with your books. We appreciate having you on. And listeners, come back next week. We got a cool guest, somebody we've known for a long time, Joy York.
No. She's not next week.
She's the week after.
Next week's guest dropped out, so I'm looking for a replacement. And then the week after is Joy York. Definitely.
Okay, and yeah, Joy goes way back. We've known her for many, many years. We keep seeing her out there supporting us and supporting our authors, so we figure we better get her on.
Yeah, then after that, we are going to meet Kim Bacellia. We don't know much about her, so we're going to meet her as you, the listeners, meet her. And after that?
After that, David Carroll. Hello, Chattanooga. Volunteer Bama Dog. I Won't Be Your Escape Goat, NBC News. He's going to be on here talking about his new book.
All right. And then following David Carroll, we've got another one we don't know much about, V.S. Kamenis. She's an author, a writer, and we're going to learn all about her when we have her on. And then after that,
Barney Smith. Barney Smith's got his own comic publishing company. Is that right?
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
He's another one that we don't know a whole lot about, but we know a little bit about him because we've read some of his materials. So he'll be an interesting guest. A little change of pace.
All right. So we got more commercials we're going to play for you on the way out. And one more time, thanks to our guest, Joseph Carabas. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you, Joseph.
My pleasure. Pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Yeah. We'll see everybody next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Family secrets can be deadly. When Lisa visits her parents one fateful Saturday morning, she hugs her father and takes her suitcase to her childhood bedroom. The doorbell rings, and 1 minute later, her father lies dead on the floor, 3 bullets to the chest. The death of Eric Holmes sends shockwaves throughout the quiet neighborhood, but for the Holmes family, it's devastating. In this fast-paced psychological thriller, Lisa and her brother embark on a quest to solve the mystery of their father's murder. The journey takes them into a secret world where nothing is as it seems. Once the puzzle pieces begin to coalesce, they realize that their father had multiple lives. As the facts unravel, the siblings discover the true meaning of redemption. Gwen M. Plano's Redemption is available worldwide in softcover, jacketed hardcover, and all ebook formats, published proudly by Fresh Ink Group. Redemption by Gwen M. Plano.
Now, from Fresh Ink Group and best-selling author Robert G. Williscroft, the Mac McDowell Mission Series. With a security clearance above top secret, Saturation Dive Team Officer in Charge Mac McDowell leads his team into critical Cold War counter-Soviet missions. Watch Mac prove what brave men can achieve under real pressure, the kind that will steal your air and crush the life out of you. in Operation Ivy Bells. It's the summer of 1972 when Mac and his off-the-books deep-water espionage group are conducting a daring undersea wiretapping operation to gather Russian intel and avert world war. Join nuclear submariner Mac McDowell for extreme diving, a battle with giant squid, and more as he risks everything in the most dangerous operation yet. In Operation Icebreaker, Mac McDowell is leading his submarine team for a mission to lay Sosus arrays under the Arctic ice when they clash with a highly automated Alpha-class Soviet submarine. Overwhelmed by mechanical problems, the Soviet crew abandons their sub near Point Barrow, Alaska. The skipper launches DSRV-1 Mystic so Mac and his crew can board the empty sub and gather intelligence. The arrival of an even more advanced Soviet sub leads to breathtaking underwater clashes with the specter of war looming. Will Mac and his crew be sunk by the Soviets, or will they safely return to Alaska where Mac's new love, Kate, anxiously waits? In Operation Arctic Sting, Mac McDowell and his team capture the abandoned Soviet sub. Piloting their prize through the ice pack to the U.S. East Coast, they must evade or confront other Soviet subs trying to recover the ship or sink it. Breathtaking deep-sea clashes erupt, including hand-to-hand combat with Soviet Morskoy Spetsnaz divers under the ice. Too far from Tuthis to escape, the Americans are accosted by a 5-ton orca. Will Mac's ship survive long enough to reach friendly waters, or will the men become just another meal for a deadly whale? In Operation Whiteout, Mac McDowell's Tuthis tangles with Argentine subs in the South Atlantic. Then confronts a Chi-Com sub off Thurston Island. Escorting a Taiwanese sub, Tuthis is attacked by a Chinese Han-class sub and a North Korean AIP sub. Will Mac complete his mission, or will he meet his watery grave on the Pacific's abyssal plain? The McDowell Mission Series by Robert G. Willis-Croft is available worldwide in jacketed hardcovers, paperbacks, ebooks from Kindle to Nook and Kobo and more, plus exclusive audiobook editions with music and sound effect. The Mac McDowell Mission Series is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Take a breath and dive in for thrilling submarine adventures in every Mac McDowell mission.
Submariner. 30 years of hijinks and keeping the fleet afloat. Jerry Pate's semi-autobiographical collection of 60 stories recounts his 30 years in and around the U.S. Navy submarine fleet, ranging from lighthearted to wrenching. All are poignant inside looks at naval operations rarely seen by outsiders. Topics include the real story behind the shuttle Challenger tragedy, risking his own life underwater, discovering a Soviet spy living across the street, surviving when an engine ignites, critical missions, and the everyday lives of men and women of the fleet. Compiled by author Robert G. Willis-Croft and proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Submariner is available worldwide in hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. Dive into Submariner for hijinks and breathtaking adventure with this poignant memoir by a true American hero.
Part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.